Josh here for LA. Leonard, seven to shoot. Kawhi makes his move. Oh! Wow!
A major Kawhi light!
Need a foul quick. He knocks him pulled down. Clutch free throws. 3-point game. Chance at the last shot to tie it here if you're Philadelphia. Trying to force overtime. Here is Curry. Puts it up. And no good! And Atlanta wins it!
The Hawks overcoming an 18-point deficit against the Sixers on Monday night to tie that best-of-seven series at two games apiece. The win in Atlanta, 103-100 was the final in that one. Right before that, you heard the big slam dunk from Kawhi Leonard on Derek Favors of the Jazz, and the Clippers pick up a win, 118-104 over the Jazz to tie that series at two games apiece. We're going to talk a little bit more about both of those games coming up here on the Sports Ticket on KD Country 94. Welcome you into the Sports Ticket. Again, coming up here during the show, we have plenty of things to chat about as we'll start just a quick look at local sports here today, where the eight-man All-Star Games again finished over the weekend, and everything's done from that realm. The Northern Plains League volleyball team winning the TBC Northern Plains League State Line All-Star Volleyball match in five sets, taking that last set 15-10. So the MPL actually ended up getting a sweep in those State Line All-Star games, taking the basketball games last Saturday, the 6th of, or the 5th of June, I should say. And then they took the volleyball match on Friday as well. So three wins for the MPL over the Twin Valley Conference, Nebraska, kind of wrapping up what we had as far as local sports here in early June. Coming up this weekend will be the Kansas Basketball Coaches Association All-Star Games at Mabee Arena in Salina. And here at some point this week, we'll have a link posted at ncksports.com for a stream of that, I believe, is good to go. I haven't had a chance to look at that yet, but Randy Walling there from the KBCA has sent us that, so we'll hope to have that posted later this week so you can watch those KBCA All-Star Games if you can't make it to Salina on Saturday. So that's a look at what's going on as far as local sports aren't concerned. Again, this time of year it slows down quite a bit from the high school realms. Obviously summer baseball going on for many teams, summer basketball for a lot of those teams that are putting in the work and getting themselves ready, and obviously football players and all those athletes are working in the weight room as well, getting prepared for the fall sports season. So even though there's not a lot of as far as one-on-one, or not one-on-one, but matchups like actual events and games and competitions to report on, still a lot of stuff going on over the summer for these kids that are putting in the work to get themselves better as we get into the fall sports season coming up in August and September for our area high schools. So again, local sports a little bit slower as of now as far as competitions are concerned. All right, also coming up here in the sports ticket, we will talk about the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, where the Kansas City Royals continue their struggles, and then also back to the NBA, there's some rules that might be changed. Looking at, in particular, a rule change on being fouled on the shot. There's also some notes about some baseball rules that are being toyed with a little bit that there might be some changes on as well. So all kinds of things to discuss here on the sports ticket today. Let's start with the bad news first. We'll just get that out of the way.
Line fair and down into the corner. Olivares will round third and he will score, and that gives the fans something to cheer about. Royals have a little two-out rally and get on the board. It's 6-1, Tigers leading.
And it didn't get much better from there for the Royals as they lose 10-3 to the Tigers, first of a three-game set there at Kauffman Stadium. You heard about Olivares scoring there. Edward Olivares was called up from AAA Omaha yesterday because Andrew Benintendi, who's actually been faring decent lately for the Royals offense, he went on the injured list Monday with a fractured right rib. The move means that Benintendi won't be able to face his former team when the Royals host the Red Sox this weekend. Royals manager Mike Matheny said, quote, he had something grab when he threw yesterday against the Oakland A's with the ball off the wall. He'd been feeling a little bit of something for a while. Obviously, it wasn't affecting his swing on the throw. It grabbed him. He was fine last night, woke up today, and it wasn't right. He had it x-rayed, unquote, and then that's when they found the fractured right rib. All those last nights and yesterdays are a day later now, as those quotes came yesterday from Mike Matheny. So, again, Andrew Benintendi traded to the Royals from the Red Sox. He struggled a little bit early, but really had been hitting the ball fairly well. He's 283 with 8 homers, 31 RBI here in his first season with Kansas City, and again, had some games of late where he'd been really hitting for opposite field power. You know, those home runs are going as a lefty. They're rolling into left field and hitting opposite field home runs. And just he's been doing actually pretty well offensively for the Royals lately. But just kind of par for the course, right, for Kansas City. When things are going wrong, they're going wrong. Adalberto Mondesi still on the injured list. And now Andrew Benintendi with the fractured right rib is out for the Royals. Again, the game wasn't much better for Kansas City there yesterday, falling 10-3. One of the issues that the Royals have had is starting pitching. Brad Keller, he dropped to 6-6, gave up 7 runs, 6 earned on 8 hits over 5 innings. Tigers would score 3 more on 2 homers off of Royals reliever Irvin Santana in the final 4 innings. Despite winning by 7 runs, though, the Tigers did need to use 9 pitchers, and that's where the other issue comes in for the Royals. They were able to get on base and have been quite a few times here lately, and that's not been the problem of getting hits, getting on base, but they are not capitalizing when they get those runners on base, when they get those runners in scoring position. They left 13 runners on base last night. They had 14 hits and only got 3 runs. Listen, you're not going to win many games when you have 14 hits, leave 13 on, and only score 3 runs. Here's Mike Matheny, Royals manager, on the Royals woes.
I mean, obviously, we'd like to have a different start. Brad looked like he had good velocity, good movement. It was just he's having trouble putting it where he wanted to. The ball was running to different parts of the plate. And, you know, obviously, we need a big play to be made early on. It would help as well. But then we had our chances. I mean, you're talking about 4 out of the first 6 innings. We had opportunities to do something big. And we've been talking about this, whether it's situational hitting or it's the big hit. Both of those played again. And, you know, there's no quick fix. You know, we just got to keep fighting until we get it going in a good direction.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's all you can do, 162-game season. Keep fighting, maybe it'll turn around. But it's definitely been an issue of late. The Royals now on another 4-game losing streak. They've lost 8 of 9. Just not playing good baseball at this point in time. The stopper for the Royals last time when they were on the 4-game losing streak was Mike Minor, and he is on the mound tonight for Kansas City trying to stop that again. The Royals 30-35 after their 4th straight loss. Mike Minor coming into the game at 5-3, the 4.50 ERA against Casey Mize of the Tigers, who's 3-4, 3.44 ERA. First pitch at 7:10 tonight for the Royals and Tigers. Again, the big issue for the Royals has been starting pitching gets going early, it seems like those bats respond a little bit to that. They hit better. They put themselves in better situations to win. Now when starting pitching is not working, like again it was not last night for Brad Keller, who's had a roller coaster ride of a season, then the Royals are going to struggle. They're not going to get the job done, and that's what we've been seeing. You know, Keller started the season just awful, 1 1/3 innings, and give up six earned runs on 9 hits his first start there in the season opener against the Rangers. But otherwise, he had 4 earned runs. Then the next game, he calmed down with his third start, gave up just 1 earned run, then came back with 5 earned runs against the Rays back on April 20th in his 4th start. But since then, Keller had honestly been pitching fairly well up until his last 2 starts. He'd given up 2-2-3-2-3-1-3-2 as far as earned runs are concerned. So he had a stretch there of 8 games where he gave up 3 or fewer earned runs. And with the Royals, some of the games that they've been playing, that's a lot of times good enough for them to pick up wins. In fact, when you look at the numbers there, out of those 8 games that I just mentioned, the Royals did pick up wins in 5 of those. You know, although giving up just 2 earned runs against the Twins there on May 6th, he did give up 7 total, but just 2 were earned because of errors. So really, when you look at those last 7 games before the last 2, he had given up 3-2-3-1-3-2, all runs that were given up and all of those runs earned by Brad Keller. So in that time, again, picked up 5 wins out of those games that he was pitching in that had that kind of success in. So, and actually, Yeah, we'll actually call that 6 wins out of those games that we were talking about with the 2 earned runs, disregarding that 7 total runs that was given up in a 13-4 loss in early May. But Keller, it seemed like, might be figuring things out. His ERA had been steadily declining. It was at one point, well, it was 40-50 to start after 40.50 to start after that first start. And so he had got it all the way back down to 5.50, but in the last 2 games, he's struggled again. 5 earned runs and 5 1/3 innings on his start before last night on June 9th against the Angels in Anaheim, and then against Detroit last night, gave up 6 earned on 8 hits, and he had a walk, struck out 5, gave up a home run. He has given up 9 homers this season, and it's just, that's the way it's been for Brad Keller. He's struggled of late again after having a pretty good stretch there where he was at least having quality starts and decent outside of the 1 game against the Twins again on May 2nd, but had really been pitching fairly well his last 7-8 starts prior to the last 2. So Brad Keller again going in the wrong direction, and the Royals as an offense obviously going in the wrong direction as well. Can't find that timely hit. They can't get those runners in when they're either in scoring position or let alone even just if they're on base. Again, 13 runners left on base last night. They had a total of 14 hits and only get 3 runs across. That's an issue. You need to obviously score way more runs than that if you have 13 on base that you're leaving on base. That's not, you know, obviously had more than 13 on base if you had 14 hits. Royals need to figure out a way to find some offense in those situations and get themselves back on the right track from that point. So, again, the Royals with that loss, and again, they put a 9-7-10, game 2 of 3 against the Tigers, who came into the series. They were tied for last with the Twins, I believe it was. I got to pull up the standings here before I go too crazy, because I do want to see what happened there at the bottom of the standings, because the Royals are putting themselves yet again in a situation where they are losing games within their division, and that hurts them in the standings when it comes down to it. The Twins ended up losing last night, so the Tigers now in 4th place at 27-39. Twins are 26-40. Royals are 30-35, just 3.5 games ahead of the Tigers now for 3rd place, as the White Sox are 41-25. They have the 2nd-best record in the American League. Best record in baseball right now is the Tampa Bay Rays at 43-24, and the White Sox are 41-25, as are the Giants. They're tied for the 2nd-best record in the majors right now. So, again, the Royals and Tigers game 2 of their 3-game series tonight at 7:10 at Kauffman Stadium. Another note from Major League Baseball. They have come out, Major League Baseball they're expected to announce today that they will suspend players caught with any foreign substance for 10 days with pay to help curtail the widespread use of grip enhancers by pitchers around the league. Sources familiar with the plans have told Jeff Passan of ESPN, who kind of wrote this story, and just kind of looking at the problems that are going on right now. The league expected to distribute a memo to teams which have been briefed on the broad strokes of the policy change that outlines its plans to penalize all players caught by umpires with any foreign substance on their person, from the widely used sunscreen and rosin combination to spider tack, which is an industrial glue that has become a favorite among pitchers who want to generate more spin on their ball. The liberalization of rules 3.01 and 6.02c, which ban the use of foreign substances, would discipline all substances the same. While there is a broad consensus among players that spider tack is over the line, a high-ranking person on the players' side told ESPN Monday the full ban of all grip agents could rankle players. A longtime umpire told ESPN the hard line is vital, and his brethren attempt to an on-the-fly enforcement of a rule that for years has been ignored. However significant players' reliance on sticky stuff has become, and regardless of how responsible teams and leagues were for enabling another cheating scandal to burrow its way into baseball, the efforts to rid the game of grip enhancers have arrived and will begin in earnest June 21, sources say. So, again, no longer able to use these substances, and multiple pitchers who asked for anonymity to avoid any punishment from the league told ESPN they either have stopped using foreign substance altogether or shifted from Spider Tack to Pine Tar, from a relatively new and controversial product to one whose place in baseball dates back decades. So Pine Tar is obviously a sticky agent. It's there to help you get grip. So based on what we're reading here, Pine Tar would be included in that. And what I just said, Pine Tar has been around baseball for a long, long time. So that's an issue there that it might change what's going on in baseball as well. I think the biggest thing that we're looking at is because batting averages were down, strikeouts were up, and everybody's swinging for the fences wanting that home run. You know, we had an inordinate amount of no-hitters early in the season. I think it's still at six right now that have been pitched this year as far as no-hitters were concerned, and pitchers seem to have advantages. So MLB is now starting to tighten some of their rules, and again, add it to the list, right, of things where Major League Baseball is reactive instead of proactive. Pine Tar's been around for how long? And combining sunscreen and rosin or anything with rosin has become kind of a practice by baseball players to get more spin on the baseball. You know, the spitball was outlawed way, way back in the day, and so they try to figure out different ways that they could get an advantage, get more spin on the ball, and have the advantage on the pitcher's mound that maybe a batter would have an advantage with a juiced baseball or a juiced bat or whatever. Cork bat, whatever. Yeah, it just things that just go on constantly in the game of baseball. And things they probably could have stopped with sunscreen and rosin being combined instead of getting to Spider Tack, the industrial glue that somebody just decided to manufacture because they were trying to make all this stuff up on their own, and somebody manufactured Spider Tack, and they were able to get that going in baseball. You would think baseball would have shut that down before somebody was able to manufacture an artificial sticky substance to put on the baseball and get more spin on it as a pitcher. Baseball, all the time, reactive instead of proactive. Just add this to the list. But again, they are going to, they say this will be any foreign substance, if a player is caught with it, is a 10-day with pay suspension by Major League Baseball. It sounds like that's going to be announced today by the higher ups there with the MLB again, and that's according to Jeff Passan from ESPN. One other thing that is kind of interesting as far as on a cheating side of things, this story is very, very interesting. It was announced yesterday that Shelby Houlihan, the American record holder in the 1,500 and 5,000 meters, posted on social media that she's been banned for 4 years following a positive test for what she concluded was a tainted pork burrito. A tainted pork burrito is why she tested positive for a steroid that's banned. Houlihan's announcement on her Instagram account Monday arrives days before the start of the U.S. Olympic track and field trials in Eugene, Oregon, where the top three in each event earn a spot to the postponed Tokyo Games. She finished 11th at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics in the 5,000 meters. Houlihan, 28, said she received an email from the Athletics Integrity Unit on January 14th notifying her that a drug testing sample returned a finding for anabolic steroid nandrolone. She said she's since learned that it has long been understood by World Anti-Doping Agency that eating pork can lead to a false positive for nandrolone, since certain types of pigs produce it naturally in high amounts. Pig organ meat has the highest levels of nandrolone. Houlihan made a list of all the food she ate leading up to December 15th test that produced the adverse analytical finding for the anabolic steroid. Houlihan wrote, "We concluded that the most likely explanation was a burrito purchased and consumed approximately 10 hours before the drug test from an authentic Mexican food truck that serves pig offal near my house in Beaverton, Oregon. I notified the AIU that I believe this was the source." Houlihan added that although my levels were consistent with those of subjects and studies who were tested 10 hours after eating this source, and WADA technical guidelines require the lab to consider it when analyzing nandrolone, the lab never accounted for this possibility. They could have reported this as an atypical finding and followed up with further testing. The anti-doping experts I have reached out to say they should have. I did everything I could to prove my innocence, unquote. Okay, I don't know if you believe her or not, if the pork burrito is what caused the nandrolone to be in her system and the issues there with that illegal steroid. But Nandrolone. I said Andrelone. Nandrolone to be in her system. Listen, we've seen too many people that have tried to get an edge in athletics. It makes me very skeptical to buy that a pork burrito was the reason that she tested positive for an inordinate amount of steroids in her system. I do agree with her, though, if she did say that I ate pork and that was part of it and that should be considered in the testing, then fast, make sure you don't eat pork, make sure you don't do this, and then take your test and see if the results come back the same and you, in fact, are cheating and you do have steroids in your system. I don't know how hard that would have been to do that, but interesting. Shelby Houlihan, again, American record holder in the 1,500 and 5,000 meters, banned for 4 years. So she will not be able to compete as of now in the U.S. Olympic track and field trials in Eugene, Oregon, which means she will not be able to make it to the Tokyo Olympics either. So a tough break there, but it's the way the cookie crumbles. Rules. I'm just going to stay on rules, and then we'll get to the NBA playoffs after we get to a new NBA rule change that could be happening. The NBA Competition Committee is exploring rule changes to restrict the unnatural motion surrounding jump shots that players are using to draw fouls. How many times do you see a game, and I feel like the three that they're really talking about at the lead of this story are the ones that and two of them definitely that I see doing this all the time. James Harden and Luka Doncic, always. How many times are you watching a game where James Harden will do some kind of weird lean backwards, sideways, head fake, falling back, doing whatever he's doing, and gets a foul call. Not only gets a foul call, but gets a foul call on the shot, saying he's in a shooting motion, so he gets two free throws. Luka Doncic does it all the time. Luka, I will tell you, it's a little bit harder, I feel like. I think it's going to be a little bit harder to enforce these rules with Luka and not say he's not shooting, because I've seen highlights where Luka Doncic is just coming up. Everything about what he did looks unnatural. Maybe shooting from the side or fading away sideways away from the goal and then shooting it back the other way with his body sideways to the basket and still makes those shots. Somehow still makes those shots. I feel like it's going to be a little bit more difficult to interpret Luka Doncic. James Harden just flails about a lot, personal opinion. I think he flails a lot, and then will just throw something and make it look like it's a shot attempt when he never even dreamed of even trying to shoot the basketball. And Luka does a little bit of that too. I'm not going to lie about that. But it is, I feel like, a little bit more difficult to see what Luke is doing. Trey Young's also listed in this as one of those crafty players that'll try to find a shot and try to, you know, manipulate and lean backwards, sideways, whatever you may, to initiate contact and get to the free throw line. And so the NBA is starting to crack down on these. They shared a video compilation of player examples with the 30 teams and outlines a number of motions deemed unnatural that were used to draw fouls. The NBA and competition committee will drill down on specific plays with the league's GMs next week to target examples that will be recommended for owners to vote to eliminate next season, sources have said. There's a growing belief that many of these maneuvers are contributing to a game where the advantage is slanting too much toward the offense, while the concentration of these issues is often focused on star players getting much more usage and exposure with the ball. The league sees this as a universal problem throughout lineups and rosters, not only as an issue for star players. So we do that, I think, all the time. This is happening more than just with James Harden, Luka Doncic, and Trae Young, for examples. I tend to agree with the NBA. It probably is happening on a more widespread view there than just the star players. It's not only an issue for star players. But, again, we see it and think about it and complain about it. Listen, LeBron James does this too. He's not listed in the names of the popular players, the crafty stars that are listed here in the story that I'm looking at, but LeBron does it too. I mean, we see it with the stars, and we see them getting the calls, and so we feel like, hey, they shouldn't be getting those calls. That's not right, and that's kind of where it leads you to. It's just, you just think the stars are doing it, but this is happening more than just with those star players. It is. I mean, I don't know how many times I felt, and this all goes to continuation as well, and all the things, all the ways you can get a shooting foul in the NBA, and it's I think for a long time been crazy ridiculous to me. I always go back to a game I was watching one time when Chris Bosh was playing for the Heat, and I think they were playing the Bulls. I want to say it was a playoff game, and Bosh got fouled at the three-point line, took a dribble, drove in to the basket, and got a layup, and got an and one. Like, how can you run four steps across the lane and dribble once and get continuation in an and one? And that's a shooting foul. So if he would have missed a layup, would have got two fouls or two free throws. So I think continuation has caused a lot of these problems. And then now you're just trying to find any way you can to make it a shooting foul to get to the free throw line to have two attempts and initiate that contact. And so I think, you know, the NBA somewhat reactive. They're not as bad as the Major League Baseball is on some of this stuff, but I feel like this is also a reactive rule to some NBA guidelines that they've just kind of let people do these things with continuation. And so they, again, crafty is the right word, right? They figured out ways to get around the way they're calling these plays and figured out ways to get themselves to the free throw line. And, you know, you don't fault those players that are doing that, the James Hardens, Luka Doncic, Trae Young that are mentioned, and LeBron James and many others that do it. And again, not just the stars, but, you know, it is a reactive issue that the NBA probably could have clamped down on way before now. But they're looking at it now. So, again, the league does want to limit the ability of players to lean backwards, sideways, for example, to initiate contact and get to the free throw line. They're looking at unnatural motions surrounding jump shots that players are using to draw fouls, and they'll keep an eye on that. There's a plan for the competition committee to bring recommendations to the Board of Governors for a vote this summer, implementing rule changes ahead of Las Vegas Summer League in August and the start of the 2021-22 season. League office is hopeful that referees can start implementing changes in how they officiate during summer league games, according to sources. So we'll see if that indeed does happen. NBA playoffs are going on right now, as you heard at the beginning of the Sports Ticket here. A couple big-time plays there and a couple big-time wins for home teams to keep their seasons rolling and to even out series on the East and West side. Again, the Hawks winning over the 76ers, 103-100. The Hawks get the win to tie that series at two games apiece. Atlanta won the first game, but Philadelphia had won two straight, including a 127-111 win last time out against the Hawks in Atlanta. But from Friday to Monday, things changed a little bit. Again, Philly did get out by 18 in this game, but Atlanta never gave up. They fought back. Trae Young was outstanding, led a very balanced attack for the Hawks, finished with just 25 points, but was a leading scorer, but dished out 18 assists in the process as well. Trae dealing with a little bit of a shoulder issue on his right shoulder and went down and missed a little bit of time, but got the tape that they put on there to stabilize, and he was good to go the rest of the way and finished the game for Atlanta. And again, finished with 25 points and 18 assists to lead the way. Joel Embiid had a double-double with 17 points and 21 rebounds, but Joel Embiid was not Joel Embiid. He struggled from the floor, 4 of 20. He was 0 for 12 from the floor in the second half. 8 of his 17 points came at the free throw line, so that's where part of what he was able to do. Again, did have 21 rebounds, so was on the glass and had a lot of success in that realm. But it, obviously, since the first two games, he had 39-9 in game one, 40-13 in game two, which helped Philly pick up their first win of the series. He has gone down a bit since then. He did have 27 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists in game two, 17 points, 21 rebounds. Again, just 4 of 20 and 0 for 12 from the floor in the second half for Joel Embiid. And Embiid clearly has been dealing again with the torn ligament in his knee, and he's playing on that, trying to fight through that. Joel Embiid is definitely a tough player and trying his best to do what he can to help his team out. But, man, if he's not 100% healthy and not playing at the top of his game, obviously there are going to be issues. Tobias Harris led the way with 20 for Philadelphia last night. Again, Atlanta wins at 103-100. Now, despite all that, Philly was right there at the end, but Atlanta again, fighting back from down 18, was able to get the win 103-100 to tie that series at two games apiece. The next game in the series will be tomorrow night in Philadelphia as they go back home. The Sixers do the top seed in the East. Now in the West, the top seed is the Utah Jazz. And the Jazz and Clippers are now tied at two games apiece in that series. Jazz swept the first two games in Utah. Clippers came back to win 132-106 in Game 3. And then in Game 4 last night, Clippers winning 118-104. They get 31 points apiece from Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Kawhi 10 of 13 from the line. Paul George was 9 of 10 from the free throw line. Clippers went 31 out of 38 from the charity stripe in the game. 24 points added by Marcus Morris as he went 5 of 6 from 3 for the Clippers as well. So former KU product making his name known there in that series. For the Jazz, Donovan Mitchell went 13 of 15 from the line, made 6 threes, had 37 points. But in the end, not enough there for Utah. Again, they fall by a final of 118-104. That series tied at one game apiece. All right, the big story coming up here tonight, the Bucks and the... Sorry about that. The Bucks and the Nets are playing tonight in Brooklyn. And the series tied at two games apiece heading into Game 5. Here's the big thing. And the big note about this, though, James Harden and Kyrie Irving are both out due to injury. Neither one of them are expected to play, and I'm pretty sure have already officially been deemed out tonight for the Nets. So that's going to be an issue for Brooklyn. Again, this is a golden opportunity for Milwaukee to get a game on the road, and if they can get this win here, go back to Milwaukee, and can possibly finish out the series in 6 and knock out the Brooklyn Nets, who coming into the postseason and into the playoffs were obviously everybody's favorite out of the East to go to the NBA Finals if they had all three of their main guys healthy. But now it's just Kevin Durant, right? So Joe Harris is going to have to step up and perform in the game with the injuries to Harden and Irving. So other guys for the Nets are going to have to help. I mean, Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant, and he's going to go out there and play his game that he does so well all the time, but he's going to need some help. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, these guys need to step up and bring it tonight. And if they can do that, put themselves in a position to get to the Western Conference Finals, going back to Milwaukee with a 3-2 lead. Milwaukee is a 4-point favorite tonight on that spread because of the fact that Irving and Harden, neither one are playing tonight. It's going to be interesting to see how this goes. Actually, I've just seen, there was just a story that came out this morning that James Harden has been upgraded from out to doubtful for Game 5 against the Bucks. So what I had read late last night saying both players are out. Harden has right hamstring tightness, and he has been upgraded to doubtful. So still a slim possibility, I guess, that James Harden could be playing. Even if he is, he's probably not going to be 100%. This is kind of what we saw with Anthony Davis, right? Do you risk putting him out there, and how much is it actually going to help you if he is out there, if he's not even near 100%? So it would be interesting to see what does happen. But as of now, no James Harden, no Kyrie Irving is a plan, and what it looks like the Bucks will go up against Kevin Durant tonight. So I got this weird feeling, though, that Milwaukee has this opportunity right in front of them, and Brooklyn's still going to win this game tonight. Joe Harris will step up. KD will just do what he does, go insane, and lead this team to a win tonight. I don't know if that makes me crazy to say that, but I just have this weird feeling that when Milwaukee has opportunities, it seems like they still just let them slip through. And so that's what makes me a little leery about picking Milwaukee to go ahead and finish this tonight and then go home to Milwaukee and finish off the series. For some reason, I'm just thinking Brooklyn's going to get it done tonight, even though they're shorthanded and seem to be completely out of this right now because they've lost two of their big three and they're not healthy. For some reason, I feel like Brooklyn's still going to get the win tonight and go back to Milwaukee. Up by a game, Milwaukee might win Game 6 and then go to Game 7. Brooklyn gets it back. At some point, Milwaukee's got to win a road game here. It's just the way it is. There's no question about it. They're going to have to win one road game to finish off and be able to win this series. So hopefully it's tonight. I definitely am cheering for Milwaukee to win tonight, but just a weird feeling that Brooklyn's going to get the job done despite being shorthanded here this evening. So that's a look at what's going on in the NBA second round playoff action here this evening. All right, we'll wrap this. Let me make sure I haven't missed anything. Doesn't appear so. So we'll wrap this with NHL hockey, where last night the Golden Knights got things started in the Stanley Cup semifinals on the western side of the bracket, where the Golden Knights won 4-1 over the Canadiens in Las Vegas. So the Golden Knights take a 1-0 series lead in that best of seven. And coming up here tonight will be game two on the eastern part of the bracket on the Stanley Cup semifinals. All these teams were split into four different divisions. So on the east side of the bracket, the Islanders are taking on the Lightning. Islanders won game one, 2-1. Game two tonight in Tampa Bay at 7 o'clock. And that game is on NBC Sports Network if you're looking to find that one. College World Series will be coming up soon. Some of those teams have been have punched their tickets to the College World Series here in 2021. I'm trying to pull that up and get a little bit look of an idea of what that's going to look like. And I meant to actually have this pulled up earlier so I could talk about it a little bit and tell you which teams are into the College World Series. So far, Stanford, NC State, Vanderbilt, Arizona. Actually, this is actually set. This is ready to go for the College World Series. So I'm going to pull up everything here. So the teams in the College World Series, there's one team from the Big 12 that's made it. That's Texas. As Stanford, NC State, Vanderbilt, Arizona, Tennessee, Virginia, Texas, and Mississippi State are the eight teams that are in the College World Series. It'll start on Saturday. First game at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, where Stanford faces NC State. Vanderbilt plays Arizona at 7 o'clock. Tennessee against Virginia at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Actually, that'll be at 1 o'clock. That Vanderbilt, Arizona will be at 6 o'clock on Saturday. I'm looking at these Eastern times that are listed here. So Stanford, NC State at 1 o'clock Central on Saturday. Vanderbilt, Arizona at 6 o'clock. And then same times on Sunday, 1 o'clock Tennessee against Virginia. And at 6 o'clock, Texas against Mississippi State. So clearly, let's see, ACC has NC State into it and Virginia. So two from the ACC, two from the Pac-12, and Stanford and Arizona. SEC has Vanderbilt, Tennessee, and Mississippi State. So three SEC teams, and then just the one Big 12 team, Texas, has made it to the College World Series. This will take place at TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha, and again gets underway on Saturday as Super Regionals finished up yesterday. And again, Texas, the lone Big 12 school that has made it to the College World Series. All right, that should wrap it up here today on the Sports Ticket. Big thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll chat with you again tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.